June 7th, 2013, New Patrick Ashram, Denver, Colorado, Srimad Bhagavatam class.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasutim Vyasam. Tato Jaya Mudiraye. We're continuing with our reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4. Chapter 20, Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena, and today's verse is number 25. Saha, that. Uttama Shloka. O Lord, who are praised by selected verses. Mahat, of great devotees. Mukachutaha, delivered from the mouths. Bhavat, your Padaambhoja, from the lotus feet. Sudha, of nectar. Kana, particles. Anilaha, soothing breeze. Smritim, remembrance. Punaha, again. Vismrita, forgotten. Tattva, to the truth. Vartmanam, of persons whose path. Kuyoginam, of persons not in the line of devotional service. Naha, of us. Vitarati, restores. Alam, unnecessary. Varahi, other benedictions. Translation. My dear Lord, you are glorified by the selected verses uttered by great personalities. Such glorification of your lotus feet is just like saffron particles. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet, the forgetful living entity gradually remembers his eternal relationship with you. Devotees thus gradually come to the right conclusion about the value of life. My dear Lord, I therefore do not need any other benediction but the opportunity to hear from the mouth of your pure devotees. Would you like to repeat?
Yes.
Two people would? Okay, everyone else don't repeat. Just. My dear Lord, you are glorified by the selected verses uttered by great personalities. Such glorification of your lotus feet is just like saffron particles. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet, the forgetful living entity gradually remembers his eternal relationship with you. Devotees thus gradually come to the right conclusion about the value of life. My dear Lord, I therefore do not need any other benediction but the opportunity to hear from the mouth of your pure devotee. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It is explained in the previous verse that one has to hear glorification of the Lord from the mouth of a pure devotee. This is further explained here. The transcendental vibration from the mouth of a pure devotee is so powerful that it can revive the living entity's memory of his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In our material existence, under the influence of illusory Maya, we have almost forgotten our eternal relationship with the Lord, exactly like a man sleeping very deeply who forgets his duties. In the Vedas, it is said that every one of us is sleeping under the influence of Maya. We must get up from this slumber and engage in the right service, for thus we can properly utilize the facility of this human form of life. As expressed in a song by Thakur Bhaktivinoda, Lord Chaitanya says, "Jeev Jaga, Jeev Jaga." The Lord asks every sleeping living entity to get up and engage in devotional service so that his mission in this human form of life may be fulfilled. This awakening voice comes through the mouth of a pure devotee. A pure devotee always engages in the service of the Lord, taking shelter of his lotus feet, and therefore he has a direct connection with the saffron mercy particles that are strewn over the lotus feet of the Lord. Although when a pure devotee speaks, the articulation of his voice may resemble the sound of this material sky, the voice is spiritually very powerful because it touches the particles of saffron dust on the lotus feet of the Lord. As soon as a sleeping living entity hears the powerful voice emanating from the mouth of a pure devotee, he immediately remembers his eternal relationship with the Lord, although up until that moment he had forgotten everything. For a conditioned soul, therefore, it is very important to hear from the mouth of a pure devotee, who is fully surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord without any material desire, speculative knowledge, or contamination of the modes of material nature. Every one of us is kuyogi because we have engaged in the service of this material world, forgetting our eternal relationship with the Lord as his eternal loving servants. It is our duty to rise from the kuyoga platform to become suyogis. To become what?
Suyogis.
From where?
Kuyogis.
Perfect mystics, suyogis. The process of hearing from a pure devotee is recommended in all Vedic scriptures, especially by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Especially by whom? One may stay in his position of life. It does not matter what it is, but if one hears from the mouth of a pure devotee, he gradually comes to the understanding of his relationship with the Lord and thus engages in his loving service, and his life becomes completely perfect. Therefore, this process of hearing from the mouth of a pure devotee is very important for making progress in the line of spiritual understanding. Sa uttama shloka mahan mukha chuta Sa uttama shloka mahan mukha chuto Bhagavat bhavat padam bhoja sudha kananila Smritim punar vismita tatva vartmanam Kuyoginam no vitarantya lambarai. My dear Lord, you are glorified by the selected verses uttered by great personalities. Such glorification of your lotus feet is just like saffron particles. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet, the forgetful living entity gradually remembers his eternal relationship with you. Devotees thus gradually come to the right conclusion about the value of life. My dear Lord, I therefore do not need any other benediction but the opportunity to hear from the mouth of your pure devotee. So Prabhupada begins by saying that in the previous verse in this chapter, that it is said that one must hear from the mouth of a pure devotee. And this is being further explained here. And that the transcendental vibration from the mouth of a pure devotee is so powerful that it can revive the living entity's memory of his eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's a difference in the sound vibration and the quality of the sound vibration. How this is possible is a question which one might ask. In fact, in the prayers personified Vedas in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The question is asked by Parikshit Maharaj to Shukadev Goswami, how is it that using material ears and the sound from the created by a voice box and so forth, which is all material, have a spiritual effect? It's all material elements. Correct? He asked that question. And Shukadev Goswami says that this question has also been asked previously by great sages in assemblies millions of years ago, wanting to know the question to this. The four Kumaras, Narada Narayan Rishi, they're having these discussions, asking the same question. And Prabhupada concludes that the question has to do with whether God is personal or impersonal. And then he goes on to say that because the Lord is personal and all energies come from him and that he is the controller of those energies, he can turn material energy into spiritual energy. And when one is sincerely engaged in the Lord's service, then the result of that is that all of the energy one is using and all the things one is using in the Lord's service also become spiritualized by the Lord's mercy. This confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in the fourth chapter, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagnau Brahmanohutam Brahmaiva Tena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhina. That when one offers something to the Lord, Krishna is giving this example, that when one is offering oblations in a fire, for instance, then the spoon becomes Brahman. The person who's offering becomes Brahman. The fire is Brahman. The fire pit, all the grains that are being offered, because the purpose is to satisfy the Supreme Lord, so it becomes reconnected. Prabhupada often gave the example of an iron rod. And when you put it in fire, it becomes hot, hotter, and then red hot. And then the red hotness is exactly like fire. So that bar is transformed from iron into fire. And when one is engaging one's tongue and mind and all of one's senses in the service of Krishna, they also become spiritualized. And furthermore, as explained by Rupa Goswami, in the Nectar of Instruction, verse 5, there are various grades of devotees. First grade is one who can utter the name Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said that if someone can say Krishna, everyone please say Krishna.
Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
If anyone can say Hare Krishna, then they're the best among all the people. That they should be, they're considered worshipable. And Rupa Goswami says the same thing. And then he said, then of those people who can say Hare Krishna, some may become very interested in saying Hare Krishna. And they see great value in it, that just by repeating the name Krishna, 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 and Hare, 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 that one will attain everything in life. They understand that this is perfection. And that person who then enters into the process of spiritual life very seriously becomes so worshipable that we should bow down to them. When we see them, Rupa Goswami says, we should offer obeisances, pranams. And then he said, out of all those people who are seriously chanting Hare Krishna, some may become completely purified in heart by the process, because of the application of the process. This will happen by chanting Hare Krishna seriously. From any condition of life, one will be elevated to the perfectional stage. And what is that? Describe that one's heart becomes pure. Pure of what? The propensity to criticize others. So Rupa Goswami says, Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta dikshasti chet pranati bishcha pachantamisham shushushaya bhajana vignamananyamanya
Nindari shunya ridamipsita sangalabhya. Nindari shunya. No more ninda, or the propensity to criticize other people. And the heart of a pure devotee is also described to be melted by Kavi Yogendra, by Havi Yogendra in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. When he's describing the process of chanting Hare Krishna, he says, Evamvrata sva priya nama kirtya jatanu rago jita chuta uchar hasatyato rautiti rauti gayati unmanavan rititi lokabhayaha. That when a person takes seriously the process of chanting Hare Krishna, evamvrata, he takes a vrat, that I'm doing this, and goes on chanting without stopping, with no stoppage, then gradually he or she becomes attached to the holy name. And then that person's heart melts. And then the person becomes indifferent to worldly opinion. He or she dances, cries, laughs, walks around in public with a dhoti or sari on, and feels indifferent to public opinion because that person is has an internal life and is in ecstasy, absorbed in ecstasy. So in that verse, it's described that lokabhayaha, the person doesn't care for outsiders and shows ecstatic symptoms, maybe even rolling on the ground in the middle of Kmart or something. But the commentators say that not all these advanced devotees show these kinds of symptoms, that some of them contain them, but there's always two symptoms of the advanced soul. Should I say what they are?
Yes.
I'm not convinced.
Yes.
Oh, all right. So, Madhvacharya says, one is that the person is steady. They're always steady. So this is a verifiable symptom of advancement. Sometimes people want to know, who's a Uttama Adhikari, who's very advanced? Uttama Adhikari just means a very advanced devotee, because there are different definitions of what an Uttama Adhikari is, and there are different classifications of Uttama Adhikari. There's a Kanishta Uttam, there's a Madhyam Uttam, an Uttam Uttam, and as many other categories in between as you can imagine. So an Uttama Adhikari is symptomized by steadiness, and this is verifiable. You can see if somebody shows up every single day for 30, 40 years, and does his or her service, this is a symptom of great advancement. You can't remain steady. You can't fake steadiness. That's one thing for sure. And the other symptom is called mukya prasada, which means that whatever comes from that devotee's mouth is for the benefit of others. Mukya prasada means whatever comes out of their mouth is prasad, because their heart is pure. They don't have envy. As I said last night, Jiva Goswami's definition of envy is the inability to tolerate the eminence of another. And when one becomes established in one's own inner life, that is, one's very much concerned with pleasing Krishna and not so much with the opinion of others, that except those who are in relationship to Krishna, then one's no longer envious of others and speaks for the good of everyone. So in the process of advancement in devotional service, we can judge a person by how he or she speaks. In the yoga of the tongue, we're very much concerned with the speech and how the tongue is used. And whatever the state of the heart is will manifest through the tongue. And also, Rupa Goswami says that a person who has this state of heart that is completely pure will speak in such a way to benefit others, and as is being mentioned in this verse, there will be a special quality to that sound vibration. It will affect the hearts of others. It will move them in a profound way. That there's a way that if I have a hidden motive in my heart, living entities are sensitive and they'll feel that there is some motive ultimately. The sound won't have so much effect. Isn't that amazing? That just by the motive, that if I hold some material motive in my heart when I'm giving instruction or when I'm offering some advice or even a benediction, if there's something in it for me, if I have a vested interest, it contaminates the vibration and it doesn't have the same effect. But if someone has surrendered themselves to Krishna and has no vested interest in the world, and then speaks for the benefit of others, mukya prasada, that vibration is profound and it has a moving effect on the hearts of others. So this verse particularly points it out in a poetical way, that the saffron particles, this is something, saffron's so delicate and such a rare kind of a scent that connoisseurs, only connoisseurs take saffron. They don't have saffron at McDonald's, I don't think. They have saffron, you know, in the kitchens of those who are preparing delicacies for the deities and so forth. And such a rare commodity. And it's mercy. One who has only the interest of Krishna in mind and who is working on his behalf and speaks for him according to what he's spoken before will then connect with those saffron mercy particles that are on the lotus feet of the Lord, and the vibration is mixed with that. So this is the potency of the Krishna consciousness movement. It doesn't come in how much infrastructure we're able to build. No matter how many buildings, say if we were to build, nothing wrong with buildings, of course. We just bought one ourselves in Mountain View, California, and are developing it. But there's a way in which one must remember that the ultimate potency of our Krishna consciousness movement is in the purity that is there within the heart and that which comes out through the tongue and in one's expressions. Prabhupada's purports are especially valuable because he's speaking from the realized platform and completely pure. Therefore, those who read them will have a transformative experience. So now we'll take some reflections and any questions. Yes, Nandini, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I was just very blessed to attend the Saturday Sunday Festival outside of Austin. And the effect of hearing from these great purified souls that have no envy in their hearts and 10 hours of chanting kirtan with 700 people in the room was very purifying.
So Nandini Prabhu was saying that she was just in Austin, Texas for the Sadhu Sangha retreat and that she noticed a profound effect from hearing from purified souls who had no envy in their heart, who were speaking, and then also 10 hours of kirtan. And she's obviously moved. For those who can't see this, I'm speaking for your benefit, but she's showing some, she's emoting that. She's feeling ecstasy and happiness from that effect. Practical, one can experience. Thank you very much. Abhay Prabhu.
Just to confirm your statement that the saffron particles are extremely rare. You know, the saffron filament is taken from a crocus, which grows in only certain areas of Morocco, and Iraq is also a big producer.
Abhay Prabhu is saying that the
saffron particles are rare, and they are taken from the crocus. It's a kind of flower.
It's a beautiful little flower. It looks like a little lotus flower.
Looks like a little lotus flower, and they only grow in Iraq and where else?
And Morocco.
And Morocco.
And Spain.
And Spain.
So each crocus only produces three filaments.
Each crocus produces only three filaments.
And it takes 75,000 of these flowers to produce 1 pound of saffron.
It takes 75,000 of these flowers to produce 1 pound of saffron.
And of course, 1 pound of saffron is about $5,000.
1 pound of saffron is $5,000 only. Thank you very much. Oh, yes, back to Adam.
You were saying that for Madhvacharya, it's given the two symptoms of how you can tell someone in advance is they're steadiness, and when they speak, it's only beneficial.
So he's saying, he's recounting that Madhvacharya has said in his commentary on the verse Evamvrtasva Priyanama Kirtya that there's two symptoms of an advanced soul that are always there, and that one is steadiness, and the other is that whatever comes from his mouth is prasad.
Sometimes you can see a spiritual teacher when they speak something harsh.
Sometimes we see that a spiritual teacher speaks something harsh.
How do you have the discernment to tell whether everything they're saying is beneficial?
How do you have the discernment to tell if everything they're saying is beneficial? Well, one of the ways as you can tell is the effect that it has on you. But in general, those criticisms should be given to those who volunteer for it. In other words, it's not the duty of a devotee to give criticism to those who didn't ask for it. This is mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in the austerities of speech. And that is that he says in the purport that unless one is a disciple, he shouldn't reprimand or correct him or her. If someone becomes a disciple, that means they're volunteering. They're saying, please correct me. Otherwise, one shouldn't take that as a... one shouldn't administer criticism to those who can't accept it. And when you do agree to accept such criticism and it is administered by someone, then, of course, you're already ready for that, hopefully. Of course, some people aren't. But you can tell by the effect that when such a person gives criticism, it's based on the welfare of the person, first of all. A spiritually advanced person acts according to Shastra and speaks according to Shastra, and therefore, as we said last night, there's Shastra and Shastra. And it's the duty of a sadhu to cut out those kinds of things that are unwanted within the heart of a willing candidate. Just like a surgeon takes away the unwanted tumor by cutting. And nobody complains. Everyone thanks him afterwards. There may be a little bit of consternation going into the operating room, thinking, you know, what's going to happen. So similarly, when we take criticism or when we take a reprimand from someone that we've put ourselves under, that at first it may feel like we were cut, but then we realize, oh, now I'm free of my anartha. And you can see the effect as we become purified. Someone's on a progressive spiritual path should be open to criticism. And we find this in the Shastra. Advaitacharya actually there was a letter that ended up in the hands of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the letter had been written by Kamalakanta Bishwas, who was an assistant of Advaitacharya. And in the letter was meant for Maharshi Pratapurudra, but somehow or other, the author doesn't explain how, he just says somehow or other, it seems mystical, it ended up in the hands of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in the letter, Kamalakanta Vishwas had glorified Advaitacharya as an incarnation of the Lord. And then he had also said that he had a debt that he needed to liquefy, a debt that he needed to pay off to Maharaj Pratyaparudra. And Mahaprabhu, when reading the letter, became very angry. He said, first of all, he says that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And second of all, he says he has a debt. How is this possible? He says, he told his followers, tell Kamalakanta Vishwas that he's a low-class person. He can no longer come here anymore. I reject him. So when Kamalakanta Vishwas heard this chastisement from Lord Chaitanya, he became very upset and morose. But Advaitacharya, who was his master, said, what are you talking about? I wish he had chastised me. And then Advaitacharya went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he said, why do you show more affection to Kamalakanta Vishwas than you show to me? Generally, you show me all kinds of respect, but you chastise Kamalakanta Vishwas. You never chastise me. And Mahaprabhu liked that very much, very pleased with that. And of course, he accepted Kamalakanta Vishwas back. And there are many instances like this when the devotee is begging for chastisement. In fact, later on, you'll find that Advaitacharya had become so upset with the glorification that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving him, because Advaitacharya considered himself a servant of Mahaprabhu. He knew who he was. And Mahaprabhu, out of social etiquette, was giving all kinds of respect to Advaitacharya as his elder. So one day, Advaitacharya, in his Bhagavad Gita class that he gave every night in his courtyard at his house, began speaking on the Yoga Vishishta and propounding that actually jnana, an impersonal realization, was higher than bhakti. And he was saying it in public, so people were listening and they're saying, Advaitacharya is speaking about jnana higher than bhakti. And they went and told Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu came running to that place and listening. And Advaitacharya was expounding on the Yoga Vishishta, jnana, how could you get bhakti without jnana? Jnana is the eyes. You can't even see bhakti without having the eyes of knowledge through jnana. And then Mahaprabhu approached him and said, what are you saying? You invited me here to come to this world and now you're ruining everything. What are you trying to say? And on Advaitacharya went, jnana higher than bhakti. So Mahaprabhu grabbed him, pulled him off the Vyasasana and he said, which is higher, jnana or bhakti? Jnana higher. Mahaprabhu started beating him. Sita Thakurani, the wife of Advaitacharya, comes running out and said, no, stop, he's an old man. And Mahaprabhu was furious. He's beating Advaitacharya there in the courtyard. And then Advaitacharya is smiling. And after Mahaprabhu had finished his tirade, Advaitacharya was dancing in ecstasy and saying, now we have seen who is actually superior. You've proved it and you've showed it to everybody. It can't be hidden anymore. You're my master. And he fell at his feet. And Mahaprabhu was a little embarrassed. So there's a way in which devotees are ego-effacing. Any bona fide spiritual path is ego-effacing and wanting to step out of the center. And we welcome this chastisement that comes. And if we don't, then we may be sheltering ourselves from spiritual advancement. Dushta.
Internally,
How they deal with it really depends on their state of mind and heart. As I was indicating, those who are advanced are looking for that kind of direction and maybe even chastisement. And if somebody comes into a spiritual circle, to one degree or another, they're looking for direction. To how much they can handle is depends on their willingness to be malleable. How do they deal with it? I mean, in various ways. Some people become upset or morose if they get some kind of direction or chastisement out of the blue. And other people, they feel happy about it and they'll take it. That's a higher position, to be able to take it from many different places. Nirkula? Well, I think that it's true that in the old days we did have constant association and there was a constant stream of instruction. I don't know if it was all perfect or great. I mean, it is important to get that and to be able to take it. It's also an art to be able to give criticism in such a way that people can accept it, to correct people in such a way that, to notice what is the state of a person. In other words, just like sometimes it said a spiritual master doesn't give certain instructions to a disciple knowing that he or she can't accept it. And if he gives it, and the disciple, he knows the disciple's not going to do it anyway. That and it'll just be an offense, and it'll make it look, it'll be hard for that person anyway to do it. So he holds back a little bit and doesn't give the chastisement so much. So there has to be a measured way in which it's administered. At the same time, there may be a culture of unwillingness to accept all kinds of authorities, because in Kali Yuga, authorities tend to be degraded in a lot of ways. I mean, there's so many examples. I mean, if you even look in the olden days, back to the back to the 60s and 70s, when people were electing a president, people didn't criticize them in public so much as they do now, every day and in every way. There was more of a respect for authority in general. And there's an authority crisis around the world, that authorities, because they've in some ways not lived up to all their responsibilities, there's a way in which some people can just not accept authority at all very much and think that it's not valuable to have an authority. So that culture is there a little bit. But for those who are progressive in spiritual life, it's good to put oneself in a subordinate position. And to answer your question more directly, if you know who you're working under, you should always know that. Vaishnavism means that you're working under a Vaishnav. There is some, if someone's worshipping the Supreme Personality of God, it directly says Vrindavan Das Thakur in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, there's some question about whether he or she will make achieve complete perfection in this life. But if someone's surrendered to and working under a Vaishnav, there's no question. He says, this is Vaishnavism. If you're the servant of the servant of the servant, then you'll attain perfection. So if you're lined up properly, you know who your authorities are and who you're willing to take your instruction from. Then if somebody comes visiting from somewhere and then gives some harsh kind of instruction, that one feels protected and can measure that instruction by checking with one's authority and saying, should I do this? Is that the correct thing to do? And then that person can help deal with it. Yes, Prabhu. Yes.
You also talk a little bit about the levels of categories of devotees.
Yes.
Just a personal question. Is it pure devotional service? Is it throughout all those levels, or it begins for a pure devotee when we say at a certain stage of the higher madhama or so on? How do we understand?
The principle of following the authority is paramount. And that means that if one, even in a neophyte stage, is following the authority through the line of pure devotees, then that person will have potency in speaking. And you can see that practically, that in the early days, again, many people who are uneducated in Krishna consciousness and certainly not would not be considered on the topmost platform of devotional service, they may have still had some lingering habits and so forth, but they were very much sold out to following Prabhupada's instruction, and they listened to whatever it was, and they would go and represent what he said elsewhere. Because they did that, they had success. And Prabhupada says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that even a neophyte who has complete faith that the Lord and his name are non-different can convert others into Vaishnavas. That means they're channeling that pure sound. And that is the principle of disciplic succession also, that we accurately represent and repeat what the pure devotee says. And pure devotees don't claim to be pure devotees at all. They claim to be followers of pure devotees. And that's our culture, to be the servant of the servant of the servant. And if we represent and pass on what the message was properly in the right spirit, then it will have the same effect. Yes, Bhakti Noah.
I was going to ask about how sometimes there are people that are just being introduced to Krishna consciousness, they can be a little taken aback by Prabhupada's strong mood. Sometimes he says heavy things, sometimes even directly, maybe to a problem or whatever, or even directly to somebody in interaction. And so they haven't taken that role of disciple. Student. So how would you explain that to somebody who doesn't really have a firm understanding of the philosophy?
Did you all hear the question? It said sometimes Prabhupada says heavy things and very pointed in many ways, and that there are new people who are coming to Krishna consciousness, and when they hear these things, they become disturbed by them. Is that accurate? They'll see Prabhupada's chastisement. Other members of the Society of Krishna Consciousness will see Prabhupada's chastisement in certain ways to devotees, and then they'll take it as non-spiritual, something like that.
I was saying actually not
other members also besides Prabhupada. They'll also see them.
Oh, I see. Those people who are new and they're coming, they see sometimes the mood of sternness or chastisement being meted out from a devotee, an authority in ISKCON, and then they'll think, how is this spiritual, and so on.
Yeah.
Right? And then the question is, how to take care of such people?
How would you explain that to somebody?
Well, generally, explaining does some of the work. But more than that is when people have a personal connection with a particular devotee and they appreciate his or her qualities and the faith starts to grow in their heart. This is what saves people from any of what they consider the anomalies of the Krishna consciousness movement. Is that they have a personal relationship with somebody in the movement and they say, well, I don't care what anybody else says. I know this person is a saint because they've experienced it for themselves. They know their heart and they know the person is good, and therefore they can't justify throwing the whole thing away because they've heard a few things here and there. Most people are reasonable and they understand in a big society there's going to be ways in which there are things that, first of all, they don't understand, and then there's a way in which some people may be personalities and they present things in various ways. So I've found basically that if I have a personal relationship with somebody and I'm and that's becoming thicker, then when they hear something or they see something, that they justify it by asking me. And they say, what do you think? And then that comes to the explaining part. So, well, it depends what it is. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that everything has its context. If you take things out of context, then oftentimes they seem outrageous or something like that. But in context, generally things have much more meaning and are reasonable. And there are cultural contexts. For instance, I had one person who had just started in Krishna consciousness, and I gave her the Prabhupada Lilamrita, thinking that this will help her to become more oriented towards Krishna consciousness. And then I didn't hear from her for a while, and when I did, it turned out that she was upset because it turned out that she was upset because she heard Prabhupada got married at a young age, or his wife was 14 or something like that. She happened to have a daughter around that age, so that she couldn't justify that and became very upset about it for some time. And then finally she talked to me about it, and I said, well, in Bengal, 100 years ago, this was perfectly normal, and it worked, and it was a part of society, and now it doesn't transfer into our modern day society in America and so forth. And there are many things that were going on culturally in that part of the world at a certain time that didn't transfer to America, and Prabhupada adjusted those kinds of things. And so there's a way in which there are always kinds of adjustments that have to be made in order to accommodate different kinds of people. So I explained it to her like that. As you asked about how do you explain things, you just have to be straightforward and reasonable about how there are ways in which not everything matches up in the material world. But on the spiritual platform, Krishna consciousness is always valid and has potency, and we have a dual existence. Because we have a material body and mind, we have to accommodate that, and at the same time we have to go on with our spiritual duty. So that creates a kind of a dichotomy. And if you take the time to explain to them, then that's about 20% of helping to bring that person around. The other 80% is them knowing you personally and seeing that you have integrity in all kinds of circumstances, and then they'll be able to overlook all kinds of things until they actually get their own context of what those things are by being around longer. And with that, we've come to the end of today's class. And thank you very much. All goes to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai Gopremanande Haribo, Vancha Kalpaturubhascha Kripasanabe Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha.